You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, August 19th, 2012, and this is the Webcomic Beacon Newscast with, from EvilSpaceCat.com, Marie Terry.
Hello.
Alex Heberling of alexsguide.net.
Woo!
And I'm the long-lost Thomas Revor of 910 Comics, that's 910cmx.com, and here's the news this week. We're going to go ahead and start off with a story called Attack of the Comic Reposters. That's right, Robot 6 directs us to the San Diego Reader, of course, home of the great Comic-Con, where, prompted by the fiasco between the oatmeal and funny junk, David King and Phil McAndrew talk about having your work reposted without credit. The chief response seems to be that if they were to spend all their time looking for people stealing their work, they wouldn't get anything else done. And it appears that many creators are in agreement that just being credit and having their website's link is sufficient compensation. Let's just go on and say that we will be talking about this one later in the show. And then also we have a new section on our obituaries. We've had two passings in the comics world this week. Both of which are great people. The first, of course, the great Joe Kubert. Joe Kubert, who is, of course, the famous artist from the Silver Age, Hawkman, the co-creator of Tor and Sergeant Rock, and, of course, the founder of the Joe Kubert School of Art, passed away at the age of 85. Leaving out the school, I mean, he was a major influence beforehand, and then setting up the school, which was the first comic art college credit school. He's going to be a great loss to the society. Also, writer and creator of many different classic properties such as Slippery Jim DeGrizz, the Stainless Steel Rat, Bill the Galactic Hero, and of course the story called Make Room, Make Room, which was adapted into the movie Soylent Green. Harry Harrison, science fiction master, has also passed away at the age of 87. We here at the Webcomic Beacon Newscast wish our deepest condolences to the family, friends, fans, and loved ones of both Kubert and Harrison in this time of grief. We will be placing links to both obituaries, the one from the New York Times for Joe Kubert and the one from Harry Harrison on his own site, harryharrison.com, in our show notes. But now let's go on to something a little bit lighter. Alex, why don't you go ahead and tell us what's happening in the world of our buzz?
This week in buzz, first up, the Oatmeal's latest fundraiser. Speaking of the Oatmeal, it looks like Matt Inman is involved in another fundraiser. Fortunately, this one involves less controversy. Well, depending on who you ask. According to Inman's site, he has begun an Indiegogo campaign to save the property in Shoreham, New York, that once held Nikola Tesla's laboratory. It seems the land has recently gone up for sale, and a nonprofit is attempting to purchase it with the aim of building a Tesla museum. But according to the Oatmeal, there's another offer on the table from developers who want to turn the area into retail space. It seems like the internet is going to heed the call. Since the project started this week, they have gained over 65% of the $850,000 goal. The project is also making news in magazines like Forbes. You can check out the project at its Indiegogo site or the Oatmeal or go to the show notes. And second, there's an interview with Comic Panda up on Robot 6. It is apparently a terrifying Korean webcomic that made the rounds a little while back, and so they are talking with the creators of it. So go check that out, and that is it for Buzz.
Thank you, Alex. And then it tosses back to me. Let's go ahead and see what's happening in the world of business. The first up, we want to take a look from an article from Publishers Weekly, where columnist Matt White takes an in-depth look at comics being released in digital format before the print edition. White points out that no matter the size of the publisher, be they DC or the smaller publishers like Viz Media or even us independents, there is no standard operation procedure here. Publishers are working closely with digital distributors like Comixology to see what works and how they can find a source of revenue and less risk in building an audience with a digital platform. White states that there are digital first editions are sort of a hybrid approach to publishing comics, utilizing the web in new ways to reach readers and boost sales. I think we've realized this at some point, and it seems that digital-only comics are having successes, so it's fair to say that we're going to see some more of this. You can check out the article over at ICV2 to see a publisher-by-publisher breakdown of what's happening in the area of digital-first comics. Or, of course, take a look at it through the show notes. Also, over at Wired.com, they have an infographic talking about the Kickstarter successes and failures. That's right. Over the past year, back in 2011, there were 27,000, over 27,000 different projects launched on Kickstarter, but less than half, 11,836, were funded. So it kind of goes over what makes a good campaign, what makes a good project, and some of the ways to work around it with a very, very informative project and infographic about it. Also from ICV2, they talk about magazine sales in freefall. That's right, print sales are really going downhill. With the spread of the new media, we are seeing more and more people going and reading their articles and their magazines over on their iPads, iPods, Android tablets, and such, rather than going into buying the ones in the stores. A similar drop followed the second half of 2011 in an article they have titled Newsstand Mag Sales Tank in Second Half of 2011. Fortunately, they were offset by the increase of sales and, offset of price. But we're going to be seeing more and more of this as time goes on. And finally, over at paidcontent.org, Judge Denny Chin has allowed a coalition of scholars, librarians, and digital activists to file briefs in support of Google as part of the long-running copyright controversy over the company's book scanning. The ruling will serve to draw further attention to fair use issues. And with that, we're going to go ahead and take our first break, and we'll be back with more news and our discussion portion of the program right after this.
The Geek Life Podcast is, get this, a discussion of all things geek. Technology, movies, television, books, comics, games, nothing is off limits. Join Mike, Paul, Richard, and Melissa at The Geek Life Podcast at thegeeklife.tv.
Welcome back. This is the August 19th Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Back for our second half. Let's go ahead and start off with our education with Marie. Marie, go ahead and educate us.
All righty. Well, we got two articles in education today. Our first article comes to us from geeknews.mtv.com and is talking about education in webcomics, specifically how much you can learn in them. Cleefield on Webcomics number 72 talks about how comics can be a great way to basically convey informational facts. They compare it somewhat to infographics in the sense they make things, break things down and make it easily understandable. And comic artists are very good at kind of surprising people with facts and turning them into something that is easily digestible and rememberable. They cite a few examples. I mean, one I thought of right off the top of my head is XKCD, because I always learn stuff from XKCD. But they cite a few different ones, such as hubris and surviving the world and science. If you'd like to know more about how webcomics can actually teach you things, check out the link in the show notes. The second story comes to us from thewebcomicalliance.com. And is talking about how to draw those notoriously difficult hands and feet. If you are an artist, you've probably run into this challenge yourself, is how difficult it is to draw good hands and feet. And there's a tutorial there with many visual references and suggestions of how you can draw hands and feet. There's some visual references and showing a construction. So go, if you're having trouble with your hands and feet, go check it out. And that's all there is in education. Back over to you, Tom.
Thank you. And let's go ahead and take a look at what's happening with our tech today. We're going to go ahead and start off with our top story on tech, which is adapting Operation Ajax for the iPhone small screen. That's right. Publishers Weekly speaks with David Buren, creator of the digital comic Operation Ajax, about adapting this comic for the iPhone and iPod Touch, as well as the iPad. So if you're looking for a little more information about going to the small, small screen and some of the difficulties they've had in scaling everything down, go ahead and take a look at this. This came to us from, of course, our friends over at Robot 6. Next up, over in tech, GigaOM has a report on mobile payment startup. the mobile payment startup Square. The company will be now offering small businesses an option to pay a monthly transaction fee of $275 instead of paying a $2.75 per card swipe. Now, even though they say it's gauged more towards small businesses, it could be helpful to those of you who do a lot of volume and will give more predictability in your costs when you're trying to plan those costs. And finally, GigaOM also has an article talking about how Twitter has finally rolled out those expected restrictions to API use. As we had mentioned in past podcasts, Twitter has knocked out a lot of the third-party applications by restricting certain APIs used for programming said applications. This has had a major result on it. So for more information, go ahead and head over to GigaOM and take a look at that story. And now, let's take a look at some of the tidbits that we've got back with Alex.
First up in tidbits, David Cronenberg insults comic books and superhero movie fans. Aww. Over on the Mary Sue, there's a discussion about David Cronenberg, who was doing a press junket for his upcoming film Cosmopolis. And when asked if he'd ever considered branching out into superhero movies, he said, "I don't think they're making them an elevated art form. I think it's still Batman running around in a stupid cape," and other such opinions on that line, which seems a little bit mean-spirited, perhaps a little unprofessional to be calling out Christopher Nolan, in particular, which he does. So you can go check out that story on the Mary Sue. David Cronenberg, for those who don't know, is the director that turns up in, you know, many greatest director lists and directed, you know, Shivers, Scanners, The Fly, 2005's A History of Violence, and he has a new film coming out this year, Cosmopolis. Next up, The Hunger Games has beaten Harry Potter to become Amazon's best-selling series in the United States. Over on paidcontent.org, it talks all about that. There's not much else to say about it. Although the article does include a lovely line at the bottom about the author of 50 Shades of Grey is now Amazon UK's best-selling author, beating J.K. Rowling. Good times. Good times. And now over on Comics Beat and Variety.com is an article about Paramount ramping up its animation slate, which is including a film based on Penny Arcade's New Kid strip, talking all about the sort of the negotiations that are going on between Paramount and DreamWorks Animation. Paramount has recently started up its own animation division to sort of try to tweak their deal with DreamWorks. So we'll see how that works out. And lastly, in the tidbits, is the cost of a logo. Over on hmagazine.co.uk, it goes through many, many famous logos and breaking down the cost of all of them, including the Google logo, which apparently costs $0. And that is it for tidbits.
And I think that was about 50 cents less than DC spent on their new logo. And from tidbits, let's go ahead and switch over to our oddities. And Marie, go ahead and tell us what's in there. Let me go ahead and, before that, give a little bit of a warning for those of you with weak stomachs. You will not want to listen to this first story from Marie. Marie, what do we have?
Well, from Webcomics Alliance, we've been given the skinny on a project from Fantagraphics where 72 cartoonists, famous cartoonists, have provided nude self-portraits of themselves. Titled Naked Cartoonists, the book features artists like Will Eisner, Lynn Johnson of For Better or For Worse, Jeff Smith of Bone, and Mad Magazine's Sergio Aragones.
Yep.
Okay. You can also check out a slideshow at Fantagraphics' website if you really want to see a bunch of cartoonists naked.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Yes. If,
believe me, some of them, I mean, in all honesty, there are a bunch of them in, that you. Some people may actually want to do that. I remember the big thing back not that long ago with John Romita Jr., who unfortunately is still better good looking than most of the people around here. It makes me embarrassed to be a comic person.
Oh, well, I'm glad it's just not
story?
Me. Our second story comes from geeknews.mtv.com and is about a real life Iron Man, a fellow who is 51 years old, had his arms blown off when a homemade bomb exploded prematurely. And couldn't afford expensive prosthetics, and so he decided to build his own out of steel. And he has successfully, after many, many prototypes, managed to make himself a working set of arms. Now he is actually building arms for the other people in his community who are struggling with the same problem. Unfortunately, obviously, steel is heavy, but they'll last a really long time. So if you want to check out more and see a picture of the prosthetics that he's made, go ahead and check out the link in our show notes. And that's everything in the oddities.
And let me add on to that story as well. So people don't think this was a story about a terrorist making things better. No, this was a Chinese farmer who was making a bomb for fishing. And accidentally it detonated and cost him his arms. It's a great story showing people who overcome their own diversity and are able to do things themselves. Good for them. But off of that happy story, let's go ahead and head over to our Things That Make Us Cry division. this one doesn't make me so much cry as nauseous and angry. That's right. As mentioned earlier, the great Joe Kubert, you know, artist for DC Comics, of the Silver Age Hawkman, Tor, as well as co-creation Sergeant Rock, as well as the founder of, the world-famous Joe Kubert School of Art, passed away at 85. There were many, many, many heartfelt remembrances and condolences printed, posted, and spoken. But it was one that drew a lot of attention. That's right. DC Comics has once again taken this opportunity to make a mockery of not only their own past, but take their very large feet and insert it firmly in their mouth. Published on the DC blog was the following. We are saddened to learn of the death of our colleague and friend Joe Kubert. An absolute legend in the industry, his legacy will not only live on with his sons, but with the many artists who have passed through the storied halls of his celebrated school. His latest work on Before Watchmen, Night Owl was among his best, and we are so honored to have worked side-by-side with such an unforgettable force in both comics and in life. DC Entertainment Executive Team. Mark Waid, currently the force behind the new webcomic host Thrillbent, as well as a longtime DC contributor, had this to say about it. Fire whoever wrote that. Please. When I die, I pray that my DC-written obit doesn't include a link to a Comixology flash sale. Seriously, please get DC's obit fixed immediately. It's vulgar and classless. Joe deserved better. Eventually, DC did amend it with more information and with a personal response from DC publishers and Dan DiDio and Jim Lee. And that's it for our news division. On that note, we'll be back in just a short moment after this commercial break with our discussion program with a special guest. So stick tuned, and we'll be back right after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We're also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Bring out those knives and splatter shields. It's time for our discussion period. Joining me today are, of course, from alexisguide.net, Alex Eberling.
Woo!
From evilspacecat.com, Murray Terry.
What's up?
And, of course, myself, I'm Thomas DeWar from 910 Comics. It's 910cmx.com. And crashing the party from the Webcomic Beacon itself, we've got Fess.
I'm Fess.
And you're not. I'm waiting for a Chevy Chase joke now. We had to start off, of course, with the our top story, the attack of the comic reposters, where, again, prompted by the fiasco between Yotmeal and Funny Junk and so many other stories, which we have and have not covered here, about people who just steal art or rip comics and put them up. And the stories, like I said, the chief response in the story seems to be that they don't mind it as long as they get credit and link back to the website, and that people just really don't have time to go looking for stolen art. Now, let me go ahead and start off by saying that absolutely right. We really don't have time, especially with small creators. You know, even big companies like DC and Marvel and Disney and all the rest of them don't have time to go out for every individual person who's drawn a picture of Superman or Mickey Mouse or whatever. Only the they really only go after the major falters. But I saying that, okay, as long as we get credit and a link back, saying that that's okay, I don't know if I agree with that. Alex, let's go ahead and start off with you. I mean, what's your take on this story?
I'm kind of the opinion that as long as it's not, you know, they're not making millions of dollars off reposting my work, and if it's got a link back, then I generally don't really care about it. And even if it doesn't, even if that link doesn't happen, I mean, I'm pretty small time. I occasionally get someone, you know, pointing things out to me, but most of the time I don't notice, and ignorance is kind of bliss in that case. So I'm a little lackadaisical about that kind of thing. I just don't want other people trying to claim my work as their own, which is not necessarily the case on an image reposting place like, you know, the Cheeseburger Network or Funny Junk or that kind of thing.
See, I the thing that bothers me about it is I'm saying that, well, I mean, it's okay as long as we get a link back. You know, for some of us, these are sources of revenue, mm-hmm. The advertisement that we have on the site, and how many people really will go through and follow up a link that's there for a stolen picture when it's included? I mean, it's if they had the thing saying, hey, there's a picture that we like, follow this link and you'll see it, to where they can hit our ads and some of the stuff, that would be one thing. But Marie, I mean, how's your opinion on it?
Well, I mean, I've had stuff like this happen to me before. I've had people steal my artwork and claim it as theirs. I've had people take artwork of mine and alter it and put it up on sites like Funny Junk and stuff. I've had people repost whole comic pages on forums and things. Because I'm doing a sequential art comic, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense unless there's something specific that they're showing people. They're like saying, oh, like, here's the thing. And on every single one of my pages, I put my link and my credit, my copyright credit. If somebody's cutting it out maliciously in order not to, credit the original source in case they do, I kind of see it if you leave the credits intact and it's exactly as it was and it's linked back, it's just another form of basically word of mouth advertising. That's sort of how I see it, because it's kind of giving them a sample for free. And in my case, it doesn't make, you know, it's kind of one of those, it's like a teaser. I kind of design my pages like that so that, you know, you read it, but you're probably going to want to go and see more. But the only way to see more is obviously to go thing. Now, if they're posting everything in its entirety, then I might have an issue. But if it's like one page here, one page there, if it was, I was doing a strip and it was like a comic or whatever, I probably wouldn't worry as long as all the credits stayed intact, because people would see it. They'd laugh and they'd go, oh, I like this. I want to go read some more. So they'd go to that site, chances are, if they like what they're seeing, and they're like, oh, I like this, I'm gonna go see it. So this is like a teaser or whatever. It's like a flyer you hand out at a con or whatever. It's just kind of how I see it. But if somebody was taking it, maliciously removing the copyright and posting it in its entirety into another site, well, then if you're trying to make money off of it, there's a little more of a difficult thing. I mean, you can't stop people on the internet from sharing stuff. It's just impossible. We've already seen that. It's more like a picking and choosing your battle. If somebody is taking my stuff and printing it or trying to make money off of it, or worse, representing themselves as me and taking commissions and ripping people off, then I'm going to do something about it, because it's hurting other people and it's hurting me and it's much more worth going after them about. But otherwise, you know, I know that it happens. I know that it's going to happen. I have had great traffic spikes from forums that have shared pieces of my artwork on them, and that proves that people do read it and people will follow original links, I think, especially if it's, you know, it's only one or two samples or it's a handful of samples and they're like, oh, I'd like to read some more, and they'll go and check out the new thing. But if they do remove the copyright, then I have an issue.
Right. So, I mean, we can agree with them. That basically, if it's a small scale thing, you know, one or two pictures, and as long as we give credit and the link back so that people can see more of the art that they like, mm-hmm. then it's okay. It's sort of an advertising thing,
right?
As long as it follows the copyright rules. But if they do it in the larger scale, like some of the strippers that we had, and no, I'm not talking about burlesque, but people who are having a thing where it would take a comic directly from the site and repackage it on their own thing. Yeah. That's a completely different story, and that's just wholesale theft.
that's definitely
one. There's the old saying that it's easier to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission. And here's the thing. At the very least, there better be credit and a link. You can be, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, and then just take it down if you get caught, let's say. But if you're taking it out, absolutely, you should be flogged. It's a lot of it is like a sort of advertising thing. Another thing that's happening a lot are where people have taken like artwork of whatever, and then they'll put a quote like over it. I don't know the type of meme this is, but it's a thing that people are doing where they're like, somebody will take like a shot from the Lorax and they'll put like a comment. There's like the actual sites where you actually take an image and then you input a code. A quote, your own quote, and then just it'll automatically mix it over the image. And I know Yamano of Sister Clara's had one of her fan arts, which was, I think, an Indian version of Twilight Sparkle, like a humanoid version of Twilight Sparkle as like a dark-skinned Indian human. And somebody had used one of these things and basically said that the quote on it was, is like, I don't really like when people make a non-white Twilight Sparkle. It's like, wow, that's sort of...
Yeah, there's like confession blogs.
Yeah,
and
it's totally douchey. And I would definitely, like with her, I would definitely not want to see my art used in such a way that made it look like that the creator of the artwork is saying that sort of thing. That would really piss me off.
The misrepresentation. Absolutely right.
Right.
Well, I mean, boy, this wasn't much of a discussion when we all agree on the same thing on this one.
Don't use my artwork to push your offensive
your agenda.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of sites out there where, like, DeviantArt, where they will go through and remove stolen artwork or misrepresented artwork. No matter what, if you want to use a piece of artwork, folks, go ahead and at least ask permission. Yeah, I mean, that's a nice thing to do. And
We're people. We don't fight that hard. It'll be okay.
And who knows? I mean, we may even throw a link over to the artwork that you've put up to your site or whatever.
Yeah.
Especially if it's fan art that we like.
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and go on to our next story, and that is David Cronenberg, director of Scanners, The Fly, the remake of The Fly with Jeff Goldblum, Eastern Promises, and of course the upcoming Cosmopolis, which is probably the whole reason they started this whole foofer-all, says that basically he's got a distaste for comic book movies. Cronenberg has said, and quote, "I don't think that making them are an elevated art form. I think it's still Batman running around in a stupid cape. I just don't think it's elevated. Christopher Nolan's best movie is Memento, and that is an interesting movie. I don't think his Batman movies are half as interesting, though they're 20 million times the expense. What he does is some very interesting technical stuff, which, you know, he's shooting IMAX and in 3D. That's really tricky and difficult to do. I read about it in American Cinematography Magazine, and technically, that's all very interesting. The movie, to me, they're mostly boring." Now, of course, it shows how much he knows because, first of all, Christopher Nolan has been a very strong advocate against 3D movies. But he also, Cronenberg also says, said, if the subject matter prevents these types of films from becoming an elevated art form, absolutely. Anybody who works in the studio system has got 20 studio people sitting on the set at every moment, and they have no respect, and there's no... It doesn't matter how successful you've been. And obviously, Nolan has been very successful. He's got a lot of power, relatively speaking, but he doesn't really have power. So that's a no. Cronenberg says, I would say that's a no, you know. And the problem is, you gotta, as I say, you can do some interesting, maybe unexpected things. And certainly, I've made the horror films and people say, can you make a horror film and also an art film? And I would say, yeah, I think you can. But a superhero movie? By definition, you know it's comic book. It's for kids. It's adolescent in its core. That has always been its appeal, and I think people are saying, you know, Dark Knight Rises is, you know, supreme cinema art. I don't think they know what the expletive they're talking about.
There are some fighting words, Mr. Cronenberg.
I don't think he knows what he's talking about. He clearly doesn't know what he's talking about.
I don't think those words mean what you think they mean. Oh, boy. Well, where to start on this one? I mean, I'll be honest. I have never walked out of a theater of a David Cronenberg film and heard absolutely nothing. Stunned silence as I have when I walked out of The Dark Knight. To say that a superhero film cannot be high art, Mr. Cronenberg, how about you actually see the films before you open your trap and start saying things? Fess, since you're our guest, I'm going to pick on you. Do you think a superhero film can be high art?
Certainly look at – I mean with the Batman series right now being the exception – the DC comic movies have been pretty shit. Now, if you look back at Marvel, who's actually making their own movies themselves because they have the source material, they're making fantastic movies that are just a great ride. And the whole high art, you know, I call fucking bullshit on just labeling art as high art, low art. If it's good, it's good. If it's good by whatever the audience that wants it, it's good. It doesn't fucking matter whether or not you call it, oh, it's high art. Oh.
Yeah, there's this whole attitude in the art community and probably by extension to the art film community and such that if it's accessible, it's not art. I got so much shit from specifically like painting and drawing professors during my classes in college when I was getting my art degree about drawing cartoon characters and anime and comics and everything like that. And it's this huge thing where if your work can appeal to a whole lot of different people, then it's low and it's no good and it's not cerebral or thought provoking or revolutionary in any way. And that's just not the case.
Now, certainly there is an advocate
who say that comics cannot be high art. I mean, the first thing I'm going to point him to is anything from Will Eisner, or, of course, Spiegelman's famous Mouse, I've used that as an example, to where they use the comic medium to its full to portray something that just the standard written word or a single picture or even spoken or movies can't do, to where you can get that slice of life that is the artist's perception.
Well, even if depending on what your definition of high art is, it's like if you want something that's like frickin'. I mean, okay, I'll go back a step. Like Alex, if you want to do cartoons characters, that's one thing. But you know, I'm not going to undermine the fact that trying other styles or more realistic styles isn't beneficial as an artist. It's just also not the only thing that's out there.
No, I'm not saying that either. It's just it seemed the attitude that I got from the specific professors that were giving me shit about it was that it was completely worthless.
Yeah, and you know, fuck them, really.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If you're like a high art is supposed to be like where it's like you look at the art and it looks like an art piece that you'd hang on the wall. It's so hyper detailed, whatever. There are some fantastic comics out there, print and web comics that have amazing art that it almost doesn't look like you almost kind of wonder is like. Like, what is this doing in a comic? You know, this could just be like a thing I put on my walls, or that's that great of art. And you know what? They can do that, you know? And there's like total stick figure art out there as well. It's all viable. And some of it is like more surprising than others, but still, there's quite a variety out there. And like, same like with Alan Moore, who will comment nonstop about Watchmen movie and other things that he's worked on or known people worked on and not even seen the frickin' movie and still have an opinion on it. Sorry, screw you. It doesn't count unless you've seen it.
Absolutely. And I mean, we've got to make sure when we talk about high art, we've got to have that phony accent.
you have to have the
nose in the air and say hi. But I mean, it's Ivory Tower, you know. Comics is an independent medium. It's not written. It is not visual. It is both. You have to have both. So you can't put it in the same category as the others. But to say that it cannot be high art, I mean, again, I could point to many different examples. But this sounds a lot more like sour grapes. I mean, we can look at some things. I mean, the Marvel movies, I don't know if I'd call them high art by their definition, but they have been a rockin' good time. And the characterization and the writing in Avengers, as well as the direction from Joss Whedon, has been so much better than so many art house movies that I've seen. And then you go to something like Christopher Nolan stuff, and I disagree. Memento wasn't his best one. I mean, The Prestige was just a mind-bender beyond which an Inception. But, I mean, to say that his Batman movies, because it's got a guy in a cape, isn't up to the same level, crap. Absolutely crap. I mean, I saw an article where it's talked about they didn't mind Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character. Batman movies. They were Bruce Wayne movies.
I think you got a spoiler in there.
If you haven't seen The Dark Knight Rises by now, tough. Yeah. And yes, the studio and DC did take some liberties. I mean, they wanted I know that Nolan wanted Bruce Wayne to die at the end of Dark Knight Rises. The studio and DC said, no, we can't have that. He's got to live. But it still worked. This was the journey of one man, of Bruce Wayne, and what he does from beginning to end of this segment of his life. And it was definitely high art to me, because it was an introspective look of that man and the environment around him, the people around him, and what things affected it. I mean, just like any of these art house movies, this would easily stand up to the test of time. In fact, more than a lot of these art house movies, which are very topical.
Well, already then.
Already. So, David Cronenberg, up yours.
Suck it.
And let's just say, I mean, yeah, they spent $20 million or however much they spent on The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises and Batman Begins, and look how much money it made, as opposed to this thing that you're coming out with that I know I've never heard of and probably will never see.
I don't know. It sort of strikes me as like this, like, you know, like sort of, you know, B-grade actor commenting on like an A, you know, A-list star's perform, you know, Oscar-winning performance. It just seems like somebody who's like not necessarily on the same level, you know, commenting on somebody who's actually doing work that's, you know, quite amazing.
It's all exactly. But he's calling them all, but oh, you sell out. You're not a real artist because you're making money.
And there just seems to be some prejudice on his part, you know, that whole buying into that whole sort of mentality of that whole comic book, you know, comic books are for kids. They can't be for adults. They can't have relevant themes. They can't be, you know, an art form. And that always irritated the crap out of me from my art professors as well. And, you know, and people that I've talked to about that, because, you know, art is largely about communication. It's about moving people, moving them emotionally, moving them, inspiring them, making them think, you know, if that is successfully done that. And I think all of Christopher Nolan's films have been very successful in making people and moving people, making them think, inspiring them, having you walk out of the theater speechless. I mean, there's not a lot of movies that do that in any genre, and that you just can't, just because the subject matter came from a comic book does not necessarily, you know, discount that fact that people were moved. Maybe you don't like it, but you have to respect the fact that he moved the masses, and, you know, he moved so many other people, and he did it in such a brilliant way. But it is an artful thing in that manner. It's like people walk away from that and they are just, you know, so you know, almost stunned by what they've experienced, that it's just you can't sit there after making things like The Fly and be like, you know, oh, it's a comic book movie, so it's crap. It doesn't matter who, you know, it's like Christopher Nolan, you know, it's a comic book movie, so it's no good. But it's just a reminder of that prejudice that, you know, that comics are for kids, mentality of that sort of generation, I think.
I don't think he's seen some certain comics.
A History of Violence was based on a graphic novel.
So there you go.
There's that. That happened.
Well, of course, that wasn't a high art film. But before we go on to the next subject, I want to say, Fess, you are wrong about one thing.
Yes.
If we take out the Batman movies from Christopher Nolan, there were at least two other DC movies that I would put as the excellent list.
In this decade?
One of them, yes.
Okay.
The first one is, of course, the original Richard Donner Superman films, the first two. You can't include the third one. That wasn't Donner. And the fourth one.
the one with no Christopher comments. Reeves?
The first two Christopher Reeves.
Yeah,
films,
that's not in this decade. I'm sorry. That is quite a while ago.
That's not the one. The second one was the action adventure film starring Bruce Willis and so many others called Red.
Oh my God, that was hilarious.
That was, and I'm looking forward to the sequel. And yes, that was based off of a Vertigo comic book, folks. That's why it had the DC logo at the beginning, the good DC logo, by the way, too. It went through and it's shown that comic books don't have to be kiddie fare. It can contain adult subject matters without a lot of things and still make an excellent film.
That was also from the Vertical title line. Yes, DC owns them, but it wasn't the DC flair. And we all know what we're talking about here. Marvel's Marvel. It's like once they bought back their properties, starting with Ed Norton Hulk, it's been just fantastic since then.
Well, and I'm even the properties that some of the properties that they haven't done. I mean, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man trilogy. Well, Sam Raimi's 2.5 Spider-Man movies were excellent, even though it wasn't under the Marvel banner.
True, and even still, you know, it's like you look at Green Lantern of what happened there, and it's like any other thing that DC has been trying is like, what are you doing? Get your act together, DC. It's like. Do what
Although
Marvel's
DC
doing.
Has been very successful on the small screen with things like Smallville and the new Arrow, which is coming out. So they have had successes in their own areas.
And cartoons, too.
Yeah. But let's go. Speaking of DC and how they can screw things up royally, let's go ahead and go down to our third story. You know, is DC really? Is that the best you can do? I mean, Joe Kubert, who is. A legend, mind you, who has affected the comic book industry, the art world itself, going back to high art, more than anybody else that I can even think of other than Will Eisner. And the best you can do is throw a sales pitch in there for something that's coming up. That's not even one of the good things that's coming up. You know, I think the best response that I saw from DC's post about the death of Joe Kubert was from Mike Mignola, who was a DC artist for a while and, of course, was the creator, writer, and artist of Hellboy, who has had three films, but none of them can be considered – two films, and none of them can be considered high art. And he just simply said, gross. This was unbelievable in how low you can go. I mean, at least it had a nice thing to say about it, but using it for a sales pitch? Yeah, you know, it would be one thing if Joe Kubert's last words were, make sure DC sells before Watchmen Night Owl. I don't think that was his dying words, though.
Tacky.
Yeah. Tacky beyond all belief.
Yeah.
I applaud Mark Waid and so many others. I mean, I'm going to go through some of the things that were said. Larry Hama, who, of course, G.I. Joe, Marvel, DC, and currently IDW Publishing, said that this is what happens when a PR flack writes a memorial. Come on, DC, show the great man some respect with a retraction and a rewrite. I mean, there were tons of people who responded about this. Now, DC, as we said, amended the blog later. It said, we are saddened to learn of the death of our colleague and friend Joe Kubert, an absolute legend in the industry. His legacy will live on through his remarkable talent with his sons and the many artists who have passed through the storied halls of his celebrated school. An important member of the DC Comics family, Joe made an indelible mark on the entire DC Comics universe, including his renowned and award-winning on iconic characters such as Sergeant Rock, Enemy Ace, Hawkman, and most recently Night Owl. We are honored to have worked side by side with such an unforgettable force in both comics and life. DC Entertainment Executive Team. If that had been the first thing they put out and then included in the upcoming work before Watchmen Night Owl, that would have been perfect. I wouldn't have minded the little sales bit in there if they had included everything else that he did.
But just like picking one thing out of it, I'll like, oh, the latest thing he did was his best. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sorry, a miniseries that, a controversial miniseries, not controversial because of the content, but because of the way that it was done, is one thing. But I mean, Sergeant Rock, Enemy Ace, I mean, as we went through down the list, I mean, Hawkman, I mean, the Silver Age Hawkman, things that cannot be duplicated as much as they've tried. And his unique style of art, which is, I won't say emulated, but is very, has been reinterpreted by his sons and so many others, is such an indelible. I think they had it right with indelible. Now, I will say, DC's Vertigo's editor, Karen Berger, who wasn't she publisher for DC for a while as well, did put up something else. She's got a much longer one, but as an excerpt from her blog, she said, "When Joe suddenly got ill a few weeks ago, I spent a lot of time thinking about him. I remember that in 1980, the first cover I commissioned as an editor was from him for House of Mystery number 292. During the next several years, while Joe was still editing Sergeant Rock, he would come to the office at 75 Rock once a week to handle business and to meet with writer Bob Kaniger, his longtime collaborator. The two of them couldn't have been more different, but they were both stellar channeling masters who loved to challenge each other. I always remembered hearing loud voices coming from Joe's office and seeing that gleam in his eye as he and Bob would go at it." Now, I can remember some of the other obits that DC has done in the past. I mean, the first one that immediately comes to mind was one that was done for the late, great Kurt Swan, longtime Superman artist, where it was a gold Superman statue, a full-page ad in their comic books of the gold Superman statue and talking about Kurt Swan. DC had better damn well have something coming out in upcoming books talking about Joe Kubert and what he did. And that's a lot classier than this. Now, what it seems happens is that this was actually written by PR people on the West Coast who had never dealt with Kubert, and their East Coast collaborator was out on holiday during this time. I just... With all the things that DC has been done, could they really have afforded this extra bad impression?
Just racking up the negative publicity.
Well, I'm not even sure what other bad DC stuff that you're particularly going off about. I know that you'll bring up some stuff, and then I've asked you whether or not you've even read the comics, and you say no, which comes back to, well, if you haven't read it...
Oh, believe me, I have gone back and I have read some of the stuff, and there is some well-written stuff, but to me, that's neither here nor there on this particular subject.
Oh, true.
Completely classless thing.
My point is that you seem to be you're a very, very anti-DC and any single thing that comes up. You want to add it to this list that you have, is all I'm saying.
Well, until the Didiot is gone, yeah. This is just the longest line of the whole thing about the new direction of DC. They are no longer about putting out a good product. You know, I don't care if it was the original stuff from the 40s or the campy stuff from the 60s or the dark and gritty to whatever in the 70s and 80s to the humor of the 90s. They always at least try to make a good product. Now it's all about the properties, and that the comic books are no longer being created by people who love comic books. And that's a broad brush, folks. I know there are plenty of people in the print industry that do love it, but the people in charge are bringing in people from other industries that don't know the comic industry and don't have the passion for it that previous generations did. And the way that they handled this just... My God, this is Joe Kubert. You can say Joe Kubert to anybody who's an artist, and most of them will immediately think of the Joe Kubert School of Art, much less some of the work that he's done. This is someone who deserved a lot better than just an advertisement.
Of course. And I'm not going to disagree with that.
But on that note...
There's not really much else to discuss about the matter, I suppose, other than, yeah...
I mean, let's just say that David Cronenberg, douchebag, DC Comics, in relation to the Joe Kubert thing, douchebags.
comic reposters that don't give a link, douchebags.
Douchebags.
Yes. So this has been a douchebag discussion period. And on that note, I want to go ahead and say thank you to Fess from the Webcomic Beacon, of course, our parent show, for joining us today. I also want to thank our usual people in Alex, of course, I want to thank you for joining us. And where can we find your stuff?
You can find my stuff at alexisguide.net.
And, of course, Marie, thank you for joining us. Marie, where can we find your stuff?
EvilSpaceCat.com.
And, of course, I also want to thank both Jason and Eric for rounding up the news for us, as they always do. Excellent job, folks. Sorry you couldn't be with us this time. And that leaves me. I'm Thomas Revoir, over from 910 Comics. That's 910CMX.com. And I want to thank everybody for joining us. See you all next week. And we'll catch you in the funny papers.